I want you to also know that your council member, Jim Graham, had a meeting to attend. He was here to receive the testimony of ANC 1C. And he has two special questions for me to ask you in particular, so you may proceed with your testimony. And sir, before we begin, you are the vice chair. Could you please state your name for the record?
I'm Commissioner Greg Edwards, vice chair of 1D.
Well, welcome. And you may proceed, Commissioner McKay.
Oh, I am here as the treasurer, and Greg, in speaking to his, taking the place of the chair, because you will recall that our chair has physical issues, and it's very difficult for her to attend meetings downtown.
Okay, remember, that would be
quite
Commissioner
normally,
Angelia
the vice chair takes her place.
Okay, that will be fine.
These oversight hearings by the DC Council are welcome, because most of our volunteer investment to address the issues of our neighborhood is wasted. And apparently only the DC Council can make ANCs into an effective institution and not a lesson that civics is a fool's errand. That DC agencies can annul the U.S. Constitution's right to petition by the great force of the agency's dumpsters. The key points tonight are basically the same as my presentation last year. The crux is that most agency officials ignore ANCs. They certainly do ours. Ignore their sworn oath to uphold the law. They just abjure, including the ANC law and case law, and seldom acknowledge or faithfully answer ANC 1D resolutions. In several recent cases, 1D exerted great effort to hold public meetings, say 10 to 20 on the topic. Each of the three I'm going to mention, we had at least 10 and sometimes more than 20. We carefully prepared evidence and arguments. We are told informally by staff, by agency staff, that top officials have ordered a policy of ignoring ANCs because they don't work properly. In many of these cases, the agency claims to have their own methods of consultation that make the ANCs unnecessary. These are scofflaws. Three examples. Until Councilmember Graham intervened recently, DC public libraries held sham consultation meetings mostly given to top-down shouts. 1D's resolutions were never answered in any detail, and certainly not in that required by law. Second, DC Transportation Department directed their traffic study for Mount Pleasant via an advisory group that excluded participation and consideration of the needs of about 80% of our population. Essentially, they only paid attention to the red trucks, about 20% of our population. They never acknowledged and answered our resolutions. And then the acting director claimed that the results of the study represented the consensus of our neighborhood. The Office of Planning is a third way into a special area plan with a process that treats our ANC as a group of activists and follows a policy that sets up their own advisory group in ways long discredited by research, by those who study public involvement. Again, ANC resolutions are not answered, and staff confide that ANCs ethically should be ignored because they don't work regardless of what the law says. Remedies. A cross-country study that was published by the Brookings Institution, a fairly reputable place, on the effectiveness of similar institutions across the country concluded that agency heads essentially never respond unless sanctioned to do so. Here are some weak first steps that the council, as our savior against this illegal activity, could implement. First, apply the same steps to handling ANC resolutions as now applied to Freedom of Information requests. They're required to enroll them to track them and to get them out on time and give reasons why not. And Ryan, use the same staff. Make the procedures about the same. Number two, require agencies publish monthly a list of all resolutions received and their progress, flagging those delays, those that are delayed, and giving publicly their rationale. Three, require the Freedom of Information officer so assigned to ANC resolutions to attend training given by our wonderful Office of Advisory Network Commissions on their legal responsibility, including case law, formulated as a checklist to accompany each resolution. In sum, Jack and I put in, we have taken off work and put in full-time effort into being commissioners, full-time commissioners. We can work for months over years of time, trying to do everything right, according to what research says, best practices. But the agencies here, like they do elsewhere, are scofflaws. They abjure their oath of office, and they do not follow the ANC law, and they dismiss it. I can give more examples of their rationale of why they say that. But basically, let's get them to try the law rather than just dismiss it as a nuisance, as they call it, an unfunded mandate. Because if they do not, ANC commissioners across the city that I've spoken to say that you go into this office with high hopes, only to have them thwarted because of the illegal attitude, unethical behavior, the abjurance of oaths of office by agency heads. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Edwards. I am deeply concerned when you mentioned that your ANC has drafted and voted on several resolutions and to no avail, the agencies just disregard your resolutions completely.
Hundreds.
And you mentioned these three agencies in particular, DC Public Libraries, Department of Transportation, and the Office of Planning. Now, let me just ask you, for the Office of Planning, are you referring to the small area plans that have gone off course a bit with the comprehensive plan?
Yes.
And I just want, and with all due respect, because I know that I had several small area plans in Ward 7, and it's the thought that the comprehensive plan sometimes becomes outdated, and because of development and several changes that take place overall in communities, a small area plan doesn't solely, you know, change completely the comp plan. It just brings some nuances and some updates to the comprehensive plan. So in the case of Ward 1, would that have not been the case, or has there been a small area plan that completely changed the complete mission of the comprehensive plan, in your view?
The Office of Planning ignored our resolutions on the comprehensive plan. We asked them to come in and to engage with them further. I would like to praise the new director of OP, Harriet Tregoning, because she said that she recognized that there were problems in the past and that she was going to do an update of these. However, some components, not this one, of the Office of Planning, told us in public testimony that we recorded before our ANC that they don't have the staff to pay attention to the special needs of a neighborhood, that they don't want to get involved in any conflicts within the neighborhood, so they're not going to listen to an ANC unless the ANC can put on an extensive program and to assure them that what we come up with is the consensus. This is an urban center. You can't get consensus very easily.
And you mentioned Department of Transportation with the then acting director. Have you had any communication with the current director?
The current director made this claim. 3 weeks ago and has come and the performance here. I believe that was March 22nd.
If I could pick up just a moment here, I want to focus on the general issue because it isn't a problem with specific agencies, it's a universal problem. I can mention the Board of Zoning Adjustment, Public Space Commission, the ABC Board. They take our resolutions and they say thank you very much and they pile them in the wastebasket. It gets very frustrating. And there's no recourse. There's nothing we can do to call them to account. And this makes our work extremely frustrating.
So you have a remedy for this, and you believe that through freedom of information, it would make it better to put the resolutions with every agency so that people... How can we make resolutions or make agency directors pay more attention to these resolutions?
Well, I'm sorry that I wrote this very too few words. What I mean is that not a Freedom of Information Act per se, but that the officer, each of the agencies, because there is laws with sanctions attached to them, we should apply some of the same sanctions to the agencies. That when an agency resolution comes in to an agency, it goes to the Freedom of Information officer. And in each of these agencies, they already have, backed by sanctions, the need to enroll it, timestamp it, enroll it as it comes in, immediately send out a letter acknowledging the receipt of this, and then within the specific periods of time, answer back what they're going to do. And if they don't, we'll then give reasons for it and keep the situation notified, and then to assure that they are in fact completely responding to that. Now, the complete response to an agency resolution, according to case law that has been around for some time, some of it was developed in response to Councilmember Middleton when he was an agency commissioner, requires that the agency answer each of the points of argument and evidence in an ANC. They cannot, as some do now, when we get an answer, they say, well, we gave your letter great weight and decided not to accept it. That is not acceptable under the law. So they need training about what the law requires.
What they need is a stick.
You know,
if there's no stick, there's no punishment if they fail to live up to their requirements.
And the resolution basically is the voice of the people. When you vote on a resolution, that is usually the position of what your single member district or what your ANC really wants. So I think all agency directors and as well as your council member need to pay close attention to that. There may be some times when they're disagreeing, you know, opposing sides to that. So I can understand that. But resolutions, when you take the time to draft a resolution to vote on a particular issue, I think it should be given the great weight that it deserves. So we need to work on that and pay close attention.
Some people have suggested, if I might, that the council pass a law taking away the parking space of an agency director that after 3 or 6 months has not fulfilled their duties.
Well, I ask, is there any way the council could assist you? That would make them respond. I can definitely.
That would be a heck of a step, yes.
Now, I want to ask you something, and in particular, Councilmember Graham, as well as myself, is interested. How much money is in your bank account currently?
A bit over $50,000.
And have you effectively used your ANC resources, your money, towards grants or anything for the good of your community?
We have, a grants program in process. We've awarded the grants, but have had difficulty getting staff to help us work our way through that. In addition, we have allocated money for good causes amounting to about $50,000 as well. Let me give an example.
I was going to ask for some examples. That's a lot of money.
Yes. As an example, $5,000 plus staff to address the large presence of bed bugs. Mount Pleasant, the residents of Mount Pleasant are 80% live in apartment buildings. Apartment buildings with...
Who was that money allocated to?
Well, it was allocated to our staff that would do research on what we can do about it and to help put together an understanding. Because I called, my district is essentially all apartment buildings, and I called three different agencies and got three different answers.
I'm sorry, Commissioner Edwards, it was allocated to the ANC commissioners?
No, to the staff.
Okay, and what is their expertise?
We hired someone with a law degree to help put together this. Because, again, our constitutional role is not to be a judiciary or a legislature or an executive. Our role is to assemble evidence and arguments. And when the executive agencies give us contradictory results and refuse to respond to this huge problem, then the ANC, we thought, could come in and find out what is the law, what are the remedies, and it might publicize them, try to get through the fog of confusion so people know what they're supposed to do.
And Commissioner McKay, you wanted to add?
Yeah, I want to make a clarification here. Our annual stipend is about $16,000. The reason we got $50,000 in the bank is that we've been very frugal in handling our funds. Now, the problem we have is that $16,000 a year isn't enough really for hiring staff. Just one person on staff is going to consume all of that and more. But we're kind of in an awkward position here where we need staff, but we don't have enough funds really to attract staff. And that's one reason why the funds pile up, because we haven't had staff, because we haven't needed to afford staff. And that's why we've got so much money. It's a strain.
So what is your annual allocation?
Well, we get about $16,000.
A year?
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you, what is your relationship with both the Office of the Advisory Neighborhood Commission and the D.C. Auditor? And don't feel pressured because the director's in the room.
Gottlieb has been extremely helpful at all times, above and beyond the call of duty, believe me. And I would say that even if he weren't sitting right there. As the auditor, he has been very helpful. He's been a firm hand, of course, as he must be, but he's also been very helpful. And I might point out at this point, the rules for hiring people are quite difficult for a lot of us to really understand. There's the distinction between contractors and employees, and there are a lot of rules. A lot of us don't have experience at being employers. I think we could use more guidance concerning the tax regulations and the paperwork regulations required for both employees and contractors, and also the regulations concerning the distinction between the two. Because you can't simply declare that you're going to hire only a person as a contractor, they may be an employee.
Are the two of you reelected, or are you newly elected commissioners?
Well, we've been there for years and years.
Years.
So I just won my fourth election.
Wow, congratulations and thank you for your service. So you've been to the orientation, don't you learn about how to file the different reports and the tax issues in your orientation and training?
There was negligible mention of the IRS regulations and the Social Security applications we have. As it happens, in that last orientation, it was pointed out to me by another commission that I've got to do 1099s for our contractors. And I have to admit, in my 6-plus years as an ANC commissioner, it had escaped me that we've got to do 1099s for our contractors.
And, well, let me ask the two of you, with your vast amount of experience, and you do have a 6-member commission, why do you have one commissioner who serves a dual role? I understand you have a commissioner who serves as secretary treasurer.
That's me. And that's because of the time burdens involved in both of those tasks. Well, I've been secretary for some time because that's a very time-consuming job. Now,
but you're a treasurer, so why do you hold the secretary
position? Because we have had enormous difficulty with treasurers. We've had treasurers who did not do the job and got us into a lot of trouble. And finally came down to the point where people said, because of my background, I was capable of doing the job, and would I please do it?
So why secretary too?
Well, the secretary is a time-consuming job, and our other commissioners, I had the advantage of being retired. That's why I put, this is a 40-hour-a-week job for me. The other commissioners can't do that. They've got jobs, they have families, they can't put in enough time to do the job as it is required.
So you are the newly elected treasurer.
There's, that's correct.
Is that person still a member of the ANC?
No.
Now, for the $50,000 that you mentioned that you have given out in grants?
We've allocated $50,000, but we have not spent.
Whoa.
We
have $50,000 in investment savings.
Yes, I gave you a sheet in which I summarized all of our.
Well, Commissioner Edwards, now you stated that you have allocated $50,000 towards grants.
No, for all kinds of purposes, one of which is grants.
Another, so you have plans for all this money?
Yes.
Okay.
But I will disagree with my partner here. Because those were authorizations, those are not allocations, and many of those authorizations have expired. Now, we do not have $50,000, a shopping list, to spend $50,000.
We disagree. Because ANCs are continuing institutions, and the allocations, when their resolutions are passed without a sunset on them, they continue in force.
Now, you say, so you don't have a staff person on board?
We're trying out a new group.
But you said that you employ residents to put up posters,
yes,
and to handle meeting audio equipment.
Yes.
So how do you pay those persons?
On each job, each time the guy who does posters gets $50 each time he puts up posters. The guy who does the audio gets $50 every time he does the audio. We pay by the job.
Okay, pay by the job. And what is your average number of attendees at your meeting?
20. About 20.
About 20. So do you feel once you get someone on board that you would be able to get more people to the meetings?
Mount Pleasant is unusually rich in civic associations. And our policy has been to encourage the civic associations, and we're also very diverse. As the Office of Planning recently observed, we have the most divergent demographics in the city. So you've got million-dollar houses, people making at least, billing at least $100 an hour, next to $500 and $600 a month apartments for people who are making $10 to $15. And the backgrounds are enormously different, and so it's difficult to serve such a divergent group, and we try to do so. So we have our meeting, our business meeting, the third Saturday, I mean, it's third Tuesday, so that, and encourage the very civic groups to meet the first week or two, so that they can go through and hear from the various different demographics and forward their resolutions. There's some research that says that works best. People are mostly comfortable in talking around others that are similar to them. Mm-hmm. Many people are daunted, as working people are very often daunted, fulfilling the standards of professional level people.
Let me point out, Greg and I represent opposite ends of our community, so we frequently differ in view.
We have that diversity.
We have diversity on the commission, believe me. Sometimes it's a little intense, but it's good. It's good.
3-3.
But the person being taken on as staff is being taken on essentially to handle the grants program because we don't have the time to do it. And that's not going to make any difference to the 10-7 monthly meetings. As for our monthly meetings, I do my best to publicize everything we do, to make everything we do available via the internet. All our resolutions are posted, all our minutes are posted on our internet websites, not just our ANC site, but other neighboring websites.
We also make an audio recording of our proceedings, and that audio recording is available to anyone who wants to catch up, find out what happened at the meeting. We do everything we can to make our meetings available to the public, which means people don't have to come to the meetings.
That's impressive that you get the word out that way.
I really prefer that the members of the public speak to their commissioner beforehand, and then their commissioner brings their views to the commission. That's exactly. The same way that the council works.
Exactly. That's great. And I want to ask you, Commissioner McKay, have you filed the first quarter financial report that was due on March 1?
That was filed in February. I make a practice of getting our quarterly reports in very, very soon. I hand deliver them to the auditor, ideally a week or two after the due date. I am making an absolute practice that we will not be late with our reports.
Excellent. And do either of you have any suggestions on how we can amend the ANC law?
We supplied 15.
What are they? Did you give those to me?
Yes.
They're at the end of the questionnaire.
Your questionnaire. Oh, okay. Thank you. And lastly, how can
I would be very pleased to discuss each and every one of them right here.
Okay. Don't let them.
Please feel free. I would love to.
Passed by the commission, so he lost the resolution. You know.
And lastly, I have one last question. I'm going to open it up for any last thoughts that you may have, but how can the council assist you with your duties?
Again, the first and most important thing is that the agency has, and it's attested not just here but around the country, are similar organizations. Treat us like trash. And so, unless there's sanctions and follow through, people who take the time to run for ANC, put in the huge amounts of time to do all these hearings and consultations, and then write and negotiate and then write up resolutions that have passed, are going to learn that this is a fool's errand and nobody should do it because you're going to be frustrated. And unless the council intervenes and forces agency heads to obey the law and stop abjuring their oath of office, this process will continue and we need help now.
And you've echoed the sentiments of some other commissioners before you, so that definitely stands out.
I could offer an easier answer. I mean, Greg is right. The law needs to be changed so that there's a stick so that agencies have to respond. But I've also found it extremely helpful to work through council members. If a council member picks up the cause and fortifies our resolution by calling the agency question, things happen. They listen to you. They brush us off, but they listen to you.
They don't brush you off because we don't brush you off. So they definitely listen. Believe it or not, most of the agency directors, most of the people that talk to me, they know each and every one of you by name. So that's interesting to me that I hear this from you because most of the directors actually know you. So that's one good step in the right direction. They know your names. So now we have to take it another step further. Yes, sir.
Thank you, because they may know our names, but then they develop excuses why they should not follow the law. You know, it's terrible to have in the citadel of democracy agency heads that scorn the law. They have taken an oath of office, and they provide a terrible example to the rest of the country, to our children, and to our federal citizens, when they can just say, well, the law doesn't touch me, and I'm just going to disobey.
Well, thank you, Commissioner McKay and Commissioner Edwards. We actually have one more commissioner. I was going to give you at least another hour, but we do have another commissioner who came in, so I appreciate your testimony. Feel free to always stay in touch with me if you have any further concerns.
I would love to discuss our 15 points.